I was about to say it's another Friday afternoon and it's come back to haunt me again. So I'm not going to say it's another Friday afternoon. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll get past this distraction. I'll hit the intro jingle and we'll come back just after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's not another Friday afternoon, depending on which time zone you are in. However, speaking of time zones, I've been distracted today and I'm unsure why it is. And I'll tell you why, because, I'm getting there. Just bear with me. It's been a while since I did anything across the water. To put that in context, I know most of you know that I live off a wee little island off the coast of England. But the other island that is a bit further away is the United States, and I haven't done anything there in a while, and I had a song to play to go in there. Let me play this now.
Well, Jimmy Bright, I'm on again, the pub where I was born. He played it from the night time to the pace of early morn.
No, sorry, that's the wrong one. What I actually wanted was this one. No, sorry, that's exactly the wrong one as well. What I wanted was this one.
Hello, is there anybody in there? Just not if you can hear me. Is there anyone home?
And when I was thinking this in my head, lo and behold, somebody sent, I've got David Bowie now running through my head, a wee little note my way saying, hey, Peter, we should do a bit of a chat. And it coincides that that girl, lady, is a lady I've been a big fan of for a while. Her podcast is, well, I was going to say it needs no introduction, but then if I didn't introduce her, you wouldn't know who she was. But Misty Little has the Garden Path podcast for some time. She falls into that category of a few voices, and I mean it in the very nicest way of saying, of people who I would literally let read me bedtime stories. And they're not usually on the line when I say that, but there's been a few. There's been about four or five who just have that, and I'll get to them in just a little. But Misty Little, big fan of your show. You're very welcome to the Sideshow.
Well, thank you for having me. And that's a very nice thing to say.
Yeah, I don't mean in the sense that I'm going to wake up some night like a scene from Father Ted and you're going to be sitting on the bed telling me about leprechauns and little people living underneath the trees. But for those who aren't aware, Misty, to more serious matters, what is the Garden Path podcast? How did it start? And how does it differ, let's say, for the Sideshow, for those who want to dip their toes in?
I started it in November of 2015. I started listening to podcasts in around 2012, and the gardening choosings for podcasts were pretty slim then. And by the time 2015 rolled around, a lot of them had folded up and stopped producing, and I was missing that content. And here in the United States, there was definitely not that much of a garden content. I definitely look over there in the UK. You guys have a ton of gardening content, but I was looking to learn from other people, to just share my garden experience with others, and to let those other people share their voices in their gardens. Because I found once you start talking about gardening with people and plants, most people can't shut up. They love to talk about their garden. And that's why it started. So it's been almost 4 years now, and I run it about 6 months a year, and that's my podcast.
We differ a lot, Misty, because you do take a break. And I think the Sideshow is the longest running garden podcast weekly on the British Isles that I am aware of since about 2011. Every single Friday, 52 weeks of the year. You do close down, and I'll be very honest with you, I missed in Peter's head, in brackets, but I missed you on air this summer. Why do you do that?
summer just gets out of control crazy for me. I feel like I need to be in the garden. I have other things I want to enjoy. There's other hobbies I have. So I feel like I need to have that balance. So if I can do the podcast in the winter months when, you know, there's little less gardening needing to be done, I can do my editing in the evenings, record with people, and have those conversations when it's dark after dinner instead of, you know, puttering around the garden. So that's kind of why I did it. I am tinkering with the idea of having maybe a once a month podcast through the summer next year, just to, because I do feel like people are kind of missing that content. And I do miss it after a couple of months. I just need that creative break, and then I get rejuvenated and I'm ready to go again. But
well, let's get into a different side of it then, because the one thing I love about yours is that you tend to do, and I think the Sideshow has done pretty much what everybody has done at this stage of the game, so it's not me bragging here in any way, but you do something that I used to do in the very, very, very early days of the Sideshow, which is that you could be out in the garden just tinkering around and you just narrate what you're doing, and then the next you're in a garden center and you're interviewing somebody who's doing something that from this side of the water or from this side of the round globe on which we live in, it is entirely different. Whereabouts are you based, Misty? What's a day for you during the summer, and how do you meet those people?
So I am in Houston, Texas, and we are humid subtropical. I don't know how, if you guys do garden zones over there, but we're in zone 9A, so I can grow some tropical plants and get bit in the butt in December with a freeze. So I have to bend my zones a little bit. But we get a heavy amount of rain, and the summer is just rampant growth. Some years it's a lot of rain. Some years it's more droughty, like this year. And as for the garden, I'm out there, you know, at least once or an hour or two a day in the summer, keeping things weeded and tinkering. But most of my contacts with other gardeners have been from Instagram, learning, getting to know people, sharing their photos, searching those tags for Houston gardeners or Texas gardeners, Deep South gardeners, which I feel is kind of lacking in the gardening world. So many gardening books are formatted for, at least in the U.S., are formatted for New England or the Pacific Northwest, and they recommend plants for people that are just not going to work down here. And so I like talking to people down here, finding out what works and learning from them.
And we'll get on to what you do and how you do that in just a little. But you spend so much time outside and talking about it that I have to ask you, have you got a full-time job, or is it, no, Peter, I'm just a plant nut. And so long as I'm talking about it, I'm working with it, I'm relatively happy and the money will fall from the sky somehow or another.
I wish. No, I do have a full-time job, but I'm lucky enough to live about 10 minutes from my house. So my lunch hour is consisted of, you know, gardening, or sometimes it's chores or working out or something like that. But I have that tidbit of time that I can do that. And then, you know, I have a 4-year-old son, and trying to raise him to be a gardener, or at least enjoy gardening and being outside. So he comes outside with us a lot, and it took some adjusting and expectations once I had him on how much time I could really devote. But now that he's older, I have a little bit more time. He plays while I garden, and, you know, it's seasonal. Sometimes I put a lot more effort into it, and other times it's, you know, gets a little weedy.
How big of a patch are you working at this moment in time, Misty?
Our property is about 1.25 acres, but it's definitely not all in garden. We have a fenced off edible garden because we have deer who like to browse. And I have another section of the garden. I would say probably about altogether, it's about 1/4 acre combined that's like functional gardening. And then, of course, you know, the rest of the yard, you know, we've planted trees. When we moved in, there was a big drought, and so a lot of the large pine trees were dead. We had to cut down. So we're trying to replace those with different hardwoods, and, you know, we also live along a pond, so that has needed a lot of work. We're removing invasive species and trying to plant natives along that stretch. But I don't necessarily consider that the garden, but it's an area that's maintained for sure.
You said one word, finstop and deer. What are those two things?
Y'all don't have deer in Ireland?
Well, we've got lots of them. We have them in our public parks, but I don't know what a finstop is.
Just fenced off.
Oh, fenced off. My apologies. Yes, okay.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, it's like an 8-foot-tall fence around the garden to keep the deer out.
Yeah, we've got the opposite thing, and we have signs saying, deer, please be careful, and it works a little bit like that, you know. slightly more relaxed. You could nearly walk into a pub and find a deer ordering a pint beside you at some stage of the game, but we'll skew on past that one. You mentioned invasive species, Misty, but how long, I suppose, maybe to put that one in context, are you on the property? How bad was it when you could into it, and what type of invasives were you dealing with?
So for here, the two bigger problems are what people call elephant ears. The big, I think, Colocasia esculentus would be the scientific name. And they look great. They're beautiful and tropical, but they're not native, and they will swamp out your shoreline and compete with all the native species. And so, you know, there's no benefit to the local wildlife here. They're great if you want to have a pond and keep them contained that way, but you let them out on an open pond, they're going to spread throughout the waterways. So my husband's been slowly working on trying to hand remove those. But another big problem are Chinese tallow trees, which they've been in the U.S. since Thomas Jefferson's time in the 1700s. They were imported because they thought they would be able to be used as lamp oil. But now they're just an escape species taking over wetlands, and they're really, really invasive here in Houston. So we're trying to remove those.
Are you into the veg growing side of things, Misty?
Yes, yes, we are. We grow lots of vegetables. Right now we're in the transition of getting things in for fall. I actually just planted a round of seeds last night, mostly radishes and a little bit of mesculine lettuce. But it's still a little too warm for some of our cooler season crops. So another month and then I can plant the hardier stuff like kohlrabi and collard greens and kale and the such.
Your Instagram page operates extremely differently to the Sod Show, because the Sod Show is kind of busy once a week anyway. And Peter's busy doing a full-time job and this doesn't pay the bills. So where you take 6 months off, I've got a try and fit my hobby in with my hobby that also pays the mortgage, if I'm allowed worded very eloquently like that. But it's a photograph of you standing waist high in water with a backpack on and a big beaming smile on you. Can you explain this one to me?
So I'm not sure which photo exactly that one is, but I think that was the one in Florida when we lived in South Florida for about 8 years, and we were very involved in looking for orchids and other epiphytes in South Florida. There's a really rich biodiversity of epiphytes growing in the Big Cypress National Preserve down there. And there's a little subculture of people who like to go hiking in the swamp, and I was part of that. So my husband and I used to document ghost orchids kind of on our spare time on the weekends, and just go out and take photographs of all of these unique ecosystems. And you can run into Florida black bear and Florida panthers and bobcats and all sorts of interesting things, and of course alligators, but you just have to keep your eye out for that.
Let me put this in context for you maybe listening in Salt Lake City or that big mass of land that surrounds that. Where I'm from, we might bump into a sheep or a cow, and generally speaking they don't bite or eat your leg. And I genuinely mean this as a very serious question. Why would you want to, number one, get into a swamp where there's a potential for a crocodile or a black panther? They're the kind of things I see in the Omshamokan Eloch. Should I go to a cinema, which I haven't been to in about 20-something years, but should I go, I would expect to see a film on the thing saying Black Panther, and you're just smiling proud as punch. It's a very far away land from maybe what I'm used to or what I'm used to hearing on a garden podcast. Is that fair? Do you accept that? And why do you still, I'll ask the question, how come you do it?
Well, that's where the cool plants are. So you've got to get out there and to see some of that stuff. Yeah, it's definitely not your everyday average person is going to want to do that. And, you know, if you're in some of these national parks, they definitely have signs warning people about alligators. It's definitely common for people not to pay heed to those signs, and they harass the alligators and feed them and things like that, which is problematic. But, you know, once you get out there, if you have any kind of backcountry skills and outdoor skills and building your naturalist abilities, it's not really that big of a deal. But I would definitely say the women to males female to male scale is skewed towards males doing this than women.
I still think you're all nuts, to be quite fair, whether you're male or female. And I think if you put more males in, I think you'll just decline the population of them by default, because of the alligators and crocodiles. So the only logic I can take from this is women are far, far more intelligent than men by not getting into swamps filled with crocodiles and black panthers. But you are of the percentage that has survived, I guess.
Yes.
I want to try and get this into a nutshell. Winter time, essentially, average mean temperatures, Ireland, UK, are maybe about 3 to 5 Celsius heading from January to March. After middle of March, usually it's sowed the potatoes. We, this year, have had a freak of a weather for no apparent reason, which has been snow and sun, but invariably, it comes to a relatively warm 14 Celsius, 16 Celsius. So you might have a high 30. And that lasts until about August, and then the leaves fall off the trees September, and we head back towards the winter time again. It means we maybe, as a Joe public, have a perception of horticulture that it's something that is invariably done during the summertime, and wintertime you chop wood. In autumn you kick the leaves, and in February you do absolutely nothing. How does it work in yours? And I know you mentioned time zones in there, but for those listening at home in London or in Salt Lake City or in Dublin, how does it work with you? And what is the, not so much 12-month calendar, but how does it fit on a day-to-day basis? Because you're at a size and a point where you're almost like a cross between a Charles Dowding, a mild commercial unit, but at the same token, you're also what some would describe as still a hobbyist. You have a lovely balance between the two.
Oh, I'm by far definitely a hobbyist. I'm not selling, you know, to markets or trying to teach other people necessarily how I garden or anything like that. But yeah, for our climate and growing seasons, you can pretty much grow year round here. We have, it's pretty much, you consider yourself a summer warm season crops or a summer season or winter season crops. And, like right now I'm going to be starting to grow all of these cool season crops, which will be in the ground through, early March. And I would start my tomato seeds in, some people are more adventurous and start them under lights in December, but I try to do that in January and get them in the ground by the first week of March, and having my tomatoes at the end of May, early June, and then by then they're done because it's too hot. It's, you know, temperature here is, in Texas at least, it's not uncommon to have high 90s, I'm talking Fahrenheit here, and low 100s or high 100, well, high 100s to 110s in some areas of the state. But for Houston, it pretty much stays in the mid to high 90s for most of the summer. We're finally starting to cool back down into the 80s again, which is a relief. But and typically winters are incredibly mild. Sometimes you can grow a tomato or pepper all the way into December. Unfortunately, last year we had a freak snowstorm in December, which almost never happens here, and then an ice storm in January. So there was definitely a period of time in December and January where I wasn't doing a whole lot, especially not in my flower garden. It was just brown and crispy, while, you know, whatever was growing in the edible garden, just kind of tend it and make sure it stays alive during those time periods, cover it when needed. But it's almost a year-round growing, which can be exhausting, honestly. I've talked to other people just a few zones north of here, like in the Midwest or even New England, and they just can't believe that how tiring it must be. And I admit it does. It does get tiring.
You mentioned peppers and tomatoes, and most people on this side can identify with that. The fact that you get to grow them in December probably puts a little bit in context weather-wise. What type of garden pests are you dealing with, Misty, or what type of plant diseases are you dealing with on a regular basis?
We get some of the blights and that sort of thing as well, but honestly, I don't pay that much attention to that. I don't worry over that, because by the time that stuff comes around, my tomatoes have given me what I wanted, and I just chop them down and, you know, put them in the compost or whatever I need to do. We have a lot of the biggest problem for us would be squash vine borers, which are a caterpillar that turns into a moth. It's really cool, but it will vine into your squash vines and basically lay its eggs in there, and its larvae eat up your vine, and then you might have this gorgeous zucchini plant one day, and the next day come out and find it just like totally dead or rotted over, and you just, it happens so fast. So that's probably the biggest problem with people here in the South and squash. There's tomato hornworms on tomatoes, but I had one last year and I just moved it to a Brugmansia to let it eat over there instead of my tomatoes, but I don't have a huge pest problem with that.
Because it's something we've spoke about irregularly on the side show, in particular when I had Maddie Harland on chatting about permaculture. Do you take that into consideration when you're piecing your garden together, as in I've planted 10, they can have their row on the outside? Do you go with the good husbandry rules of cleaning around the base of the plants and disposing of dead and diseased and decaying material? And invariably, as I always say, or as I spoke again with Maddie, once the basics are looked after, you're relatively okay. And in my department, I don't think I've ever sprayed for pests and diseases in mine. Sometimes I think I have the attitude that it's not working, I've put it in the wrong place, the plant needs to be essentially cut at the base, eliminated, and you put something else in which does work. And horticulture is, it's a series of hindsight where I shouldn't have done that, or I should have done that last year, therefore I will have done this year.
Yes, absolutely. And going back to the squash plants, it's just, I did try again this year because later in the summer, because it's usually the vine borers aren't as bad, and I've had better luck with them in the fall, and other people do too. So it's looking at that, and maybe not starting your squash in March and starting them in August instead. Those are ways to work around that instead of having to spray or eliminate. But yeah, it's looking at what grows better in what areas. It's cleaning up after the pests or the diseased plants. And another thing I did this year was moving my okra to a hotter, brighter, sunny spot in the garden, whereas I've last couple of years I've put it in a more shadier area just because that's what was available at the time. But this year I made a choice and to actually put it where I knew it was going to grow, and now I've got like 9 foot tall okra plants that I need a ladder to reach to get the fruit. So
a lot of the women I know in my life are about 5 foot tall, or jockey height as we like to call them. Misty, I want to sidetrack ever so slightly. Chemicals, I know it can be seen as a taboo word. Do you use them? Is it in certain circumstances? Is it a thing that is mildly frowned upon, or you wouldn't admit it if you were in the local cafe?
No, I will admit it on the invasive species. Those things will come back if you don't, and you can chop and chop away, or unless you're manually digging things up, it's almost impossible. My husband has been spot treating with a paintbrush on some of those elephant ears, just because that has proven to be the best method. And he, takes all the precautions necessary. He doesn't use more than he needs, but it's like I said, it's only for certain circumstances. We don't go out there and spray. I don't even try to use any kind of organic chemicals necessarily in the garden either. We have used like BT before, and a lot of people would do that for their squash vine borer plants, but I've chosen not to because there's other butterflies and caterpillars that are actually using. I have a lot of bean leaf rollers using my garden too, which turn into a couple different caterpillars. One's a long-tailed skipper and a gray hair streak, and both of them are pollinators in my garden, and so I've chosen not to try to use anything that's even organic out there because they do turn into pollinators that I enjoy. So, it's choosing your battles, really.
The other thing I wanted to ask you, obviously on your own podcast, you can gather where Peter's brain is going at this stage of the game, but for those tuning in, you've just come back this September, October, so there's a bit of a difference in between. It's like as if the Beatles took a break between, we've had this before, haven't we, folks? Yeah, but let's say Love Me Do, and then they come out with Sgt. Pepper's or the White Album, and you're going, oh my God, what just happened? There can be an element to that. So on the 2017 heading into 18 season, give me two or three episodes maybe that you'd recommend out of that list, if that's possible.
Let's see. Yeah, from last year, I think one of my favorite episodes was with the Common Milkweed Nursery. They're based out of Ohio, and they grow native plants for North America, and they just have this wonderful, holistic, natural, just growing ideal, and they were such lovely people to talk to. Another podcast episode would be with Nancy Lawson, the Humane Gardener. It's kind of talking about some of the things that I mentioned about, not using pesticides, but she breaks it into even looking at relocating animals and weighing the consequences of doing that. That's a fantastic book to read too, and expanding that. And another one would be the one with Benjamin Vogt. He also had wrote a book as well, and you're going to have to edit this because I had to think of the book for a second. A New Garden Ethic. But he's even more taking the humane gardener method and taking it even more that our gardens aren't necessarily for us, they're for all the other beings that use it, and we need to be planting accordingly and not necessarily planting all these exotic plants. We should be trying to grow for everything else. So he has a fantastic book, and that episode was good too.
Got one more question, and this is something that sticks with me. But every gardener I know has one plant that they won't grow. If I speak to Mark Diacono, he'll say, well, I won't grow carrots. You ask him why, he'll say, well, why grow carrots when you can buy them for 49 pence a bag and you can grow mulberries instead? And I said, well, okay, that makes perfect sense. For me, I grew cabbages 1 year. They were growing on the far side of the field opposite my house. Mine got absolutely stripped. And I mean, when I came out, they looked like, you know, the skeleton you'd see in a doctor's office. Yeah, except he's only got a spine and then like a matchstick man you draw when you were 7 years of age. That's what I'm talking about. That's what my cabbage plants look like. And I had people coming around and I said, I can't do this. And I went out and I bought a whole lot of blackberry bushes.
Oh, yes.
And And I planted some gooseberries. And they came out and said, oh, my God, your fruit garden looks amazing. I said, well, that'll do. That's perfect. I'll stick with these. And that's exactly what I did, or as I like to call it, the cheater's guide to growing your own. Guy on the far side of the field, his cabbages were absolutely perfect. And I swore, and I never have, grown cabbages ever again. Have you got one of them, and what is it and why?
Yeah, I'll go take it back to those squash vines. You can buy them at the store, so super cheap. I mean, some of them may not be organic or organic, but if I have so many problems, it's just not worthwhile for me to be dealing with that. And when I can be growing something else that's going to produce so much for me. Something else would be like watermelons or other melon type vines. They just take up so much space, and I'm, you know, don't need five watermelons to eat when I usually might only eat one or two, or I don't even have the space to save them. So it's things like that that I would rather buy from a local grower or at the supermarket.
For you listening at home, Misty Little's podcast is the Garden Path podcast. It's available in iTunes, Google. Jeez, Louise, I really need to get a new job. It's available in iTunes, all good podcast stores. It's the Garden Path. I'm like a steward from two spots now. I'll have all of those details and show links, etc., up on Sideshow.com, or just send me a note at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow.com. Misty, it's been a pleasure. It's been a kind of a treat talking to you. I can't say fanboy, but fangirl. I just love what you do. I like people who dance with their eyes closed, and I like people who garden like nobody's watching, as if they're on the dance floor and they're 15 and Teenage Kicks comes on. It's one of those things, but you do it wonderfully well. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. For those of you listening at home, have a great weekend and drop Misty a line. Subscribe to her one. She's far more entertaining than me. Have a great one. Thanks for listening, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Looks like we made it. Look how far we've come, my baby. We might have took the long way. We knew we'd get there someday. They said, I bet they'll never make it.
Go. Hi, this is Stuart from Two Spots Coffee. You're listening to the Garden Sodge. The Garden. God, sorry.
Come on, you think you know the name of this?
I know. Yeah. You're going to have to stop that now. I can't do it anymore.
No, I'm not stopping it.
Now you're listening to the Sod Show Garden.
The
Sod Show Garden podcast.
It's another episode of the Sod Show. I nearly said it there, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay, we leave it at that. You know it's about to come. Thanks for listening.
That was good. Yeah, that was good.